Congratulations, you. You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast. Yes, you are.
All the way from London, we have Mr. Robert Sarkis coming in to talk about Scarfy's 25th anniversary. Morena, Robert, how you doing?
Good morning. Well, good evening for me.
Oh, good evening. Yes, sorry.
No, good morning to you. Good morning, Dunedin.
Yeah.
that's my one good morning Vietnam chance.
How are things over in London town?
Things are good. It's great. It's great being over here this time of year because it's just so festive. You know, they do the lights. They do Christmas proper here, and it feels like kind of Christmas as Christmas should be, because you know we were all brought up on the same storybooks, and you know, White Christmas and all of that. So here it's not a White Christmas, but it is cold and the Christmas lights are out. So it's awesome to be here. I'm here for work, but it's awesome to be here at this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Now that's funny about all the media we do consume in our childhood, a bit always coming from, you know, the UK or the US, and it's always a White Christmas. I've never had a White Christmas in my life. It's always been sunny. It's always been lovely.
You know what? I've had one.
Really?
Or if not white, a white Christmas, if not a pure white storybook Christmas, I have had one Christmas where it actually snowed. And do you want to, on Christmas Day, and yeah. Do you want to guess where that is? Where that was?
Did you grow, do I get one qualifying question?
No, just guess.
No, okay.
Oh, sure, no.
I just want to know if it was in the South or the North Island first.
Well, I think you can guess that. I mean, you're not going to have a white Christmas in the North Island.
Oh, mate, so, you had a bloody New Plymouth on it. okay, I'm going to guess Littleton.
Oh, my goodness. No, in the town where you are and your listeners are, in sunny Dunedin,
it
snowed. When I was a child on Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful.
In Mornington.
Oh, lovely. That's a beautiful spot for a Christmas. There's so many good views out in Mornington. So many lovely views.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's another way of saying it was a shit Christmas Day that year.
Oh, man. Well, hopefully not this year. Hopefully not this year. We're here to talk about Scarfy's. And in doing research on the film, I saw that in the US it was released as Crime 101. Why is that?
Well, the term Scarfy's has no meaning anywhere other than New Zealand.
Yes.
is the simple reason.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess, I mean, here everyone knows what that meant. It was already, when we made the film, you know, it was a highly popularized term. You know, mm-hmm. It was generally what was, you know, whenever you watched a rugby game. I think it's still the case now but back then it was a Carisbrook. Whenever you watched a rugby game on TV, that the announcer Keith Quinn back in the day would always talk about the Scarfies on the terrace, with, you know, the students on the terrace, and so, you know, we, I guess, sort of hooked into that because it seemed like, I mean, it seemed like a cool title for a film. I mean, who back then, who wouldn't want to go to a film about Scarfies? You know, sort of student culture, which had, you know, really never been exploited in, you know, on feature film before. And but in America, it's just a meaningless term. And beyond that, actually, it's a little bit close to other films like Scarface.
Ah, true.
The thing is that you don't, as a filmmaker, you don't get to decide what the title of your film is outside your home territory.
Yeah.
You sign that right away. And Crime 101 it is. It, actually, and I think in Spain, and I've got the poster somewhere, in Spain it was called, and I apologize if anyone's Spanish and is listening to this, I'm going to butcher your language, but it was called Marijuana El Soto Maltido, which meant marijuana, something like the intruder in the basement. Yeah. So I've got, you know, this fantastic poster of the film with, you know, all the imagery that we're familiar with, you know, the great house and the characters wearing their yellow and blue makeup, face paint, and with marijuana and a big, you know, marijuana leaf. So, you know, it's pretty funny because I never thought of myself as any kind of stoner. I would have been quite surprised that I was, when I was a kid, that I'd be the one that made a film called Marijuana. But there you go.
Certainly you an achievement. So
you can't anticipate what's going to happen.
No, you can't. Student culture at
Otago. Not with the Spanish, anyway.
No, for sure. Student culture at the uni has, you know, definitely changed since, in the 25 years since Scarfie's released in 1999. But I want to know.
That's a shame. Has it?
Quite a lot, I would say. Yeah.
Is there no drinking anymore? Is that not allowed?
There's a lot of drinking, but it's not at pubs. All the pubs are closed, so it's flats.
I thought that was kind of crazy when they did that. Like I do remember when the Gardies Tavern was closed, and obviously at some point the Captain Cook was closed, but that's probably open again.
It's going to be opening again probably soon.
Yeah, so, yeah. But anyway, the Gardies, I think from memory, was closed and purchased by the university, and you know that was a kind of a classic student pub, and it just made no sense to me because it was kind of in a way controlling the drinking, and also it was just so much part of the sort of social scene. I mean, it's great to have flat parties and everything. I mean, we depict a flat party in Scarfie's, but I think one of the great things about that sort of Dunedin culture, and certainly the Dunedin culture I lived while being a Scarfie, while being at Otago, was that very, very social culture where you had, young people from all over the country, you know, mixing and mingling and socialising, you know, and yes, drinking. Mm. I think it's great to have environments where that's safe. Yeah, I hope it all hasn't changed for the worse. I hope it's, you know, I hope there's some things that are still great and people are enjoying that stage of life, because it is awesome.
It's still a really cool melting pot. It's still probably the best, it still definitely has the best student culture in the country, I would say. But, you know, there is that kind of a neoliberal aspect to all this change. And, yeah, it's a shame student pubs aren't here anymore. They might be here in the future, but we'll have to wait and see. I want to know, were the Highlanders better or worse back in 1999?
You know, to be honest, I'm not a massive rugby follower, so I can't pretend to know how they're doing now. You'll have to inform me on that. So I can't answer the question. but certainly around about the time when we were making it, they were on a high. And in fact, I do remember we did quite a lot of our filming in a sort of a warehouse building.
Yes.
Princess Street. Princess Street. Yeah. And I do remember one day we were filming and we were, I think, having lunch, and there were lunch or dinner or whatever, and outside, and there were just large numbers of people kind of coming back from Carisbrook, heading back towards the Octagon area, literally past where we were filming, although they didn't know we were filming there. And I think we'd just won the NPC, which our film had actually depicted that, the winning of the NPC, because, you know, Duncan and I, you know, we always knew how rugby mad Dunedin culture was, and so it seemed... Yeah, so it was sort of... There was definitely a moment of life imitating art.
Crack up. That's so cool. That's such a coincidence, man. You were given around $1.6 million to make this film by the New Zealand Film Commission back in the day. How surprised were you when you were given that budget to make a film about a bunch of students who, you know, usurp a weed dealer's trade and nearly murder the poor?
You know, I didn't really think about it in those terms. When you ask that question, I think, yeah, I should have been quite shocked that our funding agencies were not too conservative. I think there was a sort of a point of change around there. Scarfie's, I think, was kind of the beginning of a change, sort of a new generation of of filmmakers, like literally a new generation, you know, of filmmakers. I think just turned 30, or was in the very early 30s, and, you know, kind of most kind of filmmakers were, who were really established, were quite a lot older than that. And really everyone involved in Scarfies, you know, was a young person, you know, was, you know, most people were in their 20s. I was one of the oldest, being 30. And, you know, and so there was sort of this generational kind of shift. And I guess I can only presume that the funding agencies sort of realized that they needed to kind of go with the times, I suppose. Mm. The main thing that did worry me at the time was what the attitude of Dunedin people would be like, because I did think that Dunedin people, not students, I knew they'd probably love it, but you know, the kind the of residents. Conservative yeah. Dunedin, yeah. I thought everyone would think it was really cool that there was a feature film being made, and we, you know, we had plenty of publicity in the ODT while we were shooting the film, you know, kind of, you know, emphasizing, you know, isn't it cool, we're making a feature film in Dunedin and it's Dunedin people doing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was something to celebrate. I did keep the plot line very quiet. And I remember heading off to the Regent Theatre for our premiere, and having, well, we had like 1,800 people. It was packed. It was I think the opening or the closing perhaps of the film festival that year. Mm. We're talking the year 2000, mm. 25 years ago. No, the year 1999. Sorry, just before the millennium. And I remember thinking, well, this night is either going to be really awesome or truly awful, because now this is the moment of truth where, you know, conservative Dunedin, or, you know, quote unquote, what I thought to be perhaps conservative Dunedin, was going to see what we'd actually made, which was, pretty extreme. I mean, it's, there's torture in there, right? Low level, but there's still torture. And, you know, and it's not like these students are living particularly wholesome kind of lifestyles. You know, it gets, it's fun, but it gets dark. And Dunedin looks really cold, yeah. and so I was, you know, I was worried that there might be a backlash, you know, with Dunedin people kind of going, well, really, and the opposite happened. You know, the film was just instantly embraced in that screening. I just sort of remember sitting somewhere up front in that audience and hearing this kind of wave of cheering basically coming from the very back of the Regent Theatre, literally like a kind of an oral Mexican wave coming from the back to the front and over me, the moment that we cut to a shot of, like in the first minute of the film, the moment we cut to a shot of the Captain Cook Tavern.
You know? Yeah.
You know, and it was this... And it was more like being at a rugby match than a film premiere. But it was, the super interesting thing about it was it was not just yay Captain Cook. It was sort of a kind of, there's a validation to a place, I think, and yeah. to the you're validated when you see your place on a screen.
Yes.
You know, and
representation.
People,
you know.
Yeah, people wanted to celebrate that because, like, I don't think there'd been before Scarfies a feature film that was, I mean, there might have been, you know, bits, there probably were bits of feature films that have been shot in Dunedin, you know, way back, Goodbye Pork Pie had a couple of scenes, but there hadn't been a Dunedin feature film, and this was the first one, and it really made an impact. You know, it's like, oh, we're, you know, because it wasn't, it, you know, while it was all about all that dark stuff that happens in the film, what it was really about was sort of celebrating a culture, you know, and celebrating a place. You know, and I think that's probably one of the reasons, you know, kind of one of the reasons for its longevity.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of places, the film uses 49 Brown Street as the house that most of the film is set in, although the sets were in fact part of a condemned Roslyn house that were put up in the abandoned car park on Princess Street. But when you were considering the location for the film, were you thinking of something, you know, on Castle Street, or did that seem too obvious to you?
No, it's not that it wasn't. I was absolutely thinking of somewhere on Castle Street, or I thought, or somewhere in North Dunedin, mm-hmm. you know. And I spent quite a lot of time kind of looking in that area to find, because no, I wasn't concerned about being too obvious.
Okay, yeah.
I wanted it to be deeply rooted in sort of student culture, but. And you know, I that's where I thought it would be set when I started. But I also wanted somewhere that would look great on screen and feel, as soon as you saw it, you'd feel a kind of a weight. You know, it's like something gothic, I suppose.
Mm.
And what I realized is that as soon as you had a house on a hill, you've got all sorts of other opportunities. I mean, it's an amazing house, of course. It's got super gothic qualities, but there's probably other, you know, houses like that on the flat. But on the flat, it's just the flat. When as soon as you get up on a hill, you can shoot past it. You can look up towards it, mm. and it feels very ominous because you've got the sky. Or you can shoot past it back towards the city. You've got just so many more options. And actually, it's, you know, it's really great to use the topography of Dunedin. You know, you see more of Dunedin,
yes.
kind of up there.
Yes.
So you know, and then actually when I found it and kind of looked through it and sort of realized it would be potentially brilliant, I didn't really know the history of it as a, you know, very famous party house back in the day. I'm
oh,
not
really?
Sure if that's still the case now. And yeah, so it's, you know, so many people have come up to me, you know, after seeing the film, you know, at screenings and things, and got, yeah, I remember great parties at that place. I was obviously just never invited to one. But we actually did quite a lot to that house. I mean, you know, this is sort of the I don't know, the enthusiasm of kind of, you know, young filmmakers. I mean, me and my producer, we kind of went. We didn't have the money to make the film at the start of the year of 88, I suppose, is when we shot it. But we knew that we wanted to make it. We thought we wanted to make it in winter, actually, and we kind of thought, well, if we're going to do that, then we want to guarantee that we can shoot in that house. So once we'd found the house, we actually took, and we paid for it ourselves. I don't know how. I was sort of making kind of low budget commercials and things. So it's sort of like, you know, it's very much sort of filmmaking on a credit card kind of stuff. Which is kind of what being a filmmaker feels like, to be perfectly honest. But it's what we did is we rented the house ourselves. We took out a lease on this 4-bedroom property, and then we sublet it to some students who could stay there.
Oh, I think Zoom is acting up here. Uh-oh. Oh, no, this never happens.
Around exam time, sadly. Nicely, I would like to think, kicked them out of the house and turned it into our production office, and then turned it from the production office into an actual set.
Oh, crack up. Big story there, big story. I really want to thank you for your time and coming on here this morning, Rob. It was fantastic talking with you.
Awesome. No, it's great to great to be chatting about something that was made, you know, so long ago, and it's super cool that that Madman are doing a screening in Dunedin. Hopefully we'll pack the Rialto. What is it? Friday night?
Yeah, tomorrow at 8:30 p.m. Tomorrow at 8:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Rialto. Yeah.
Yeah. Be there. I wish I could.
Yeah. It's going to be such a cool time. All right. Thank you very much. Have a good time in London.
Okay. Cheers.
Cheers. All right, as we mentioned, thank you for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There's heaps more at r1.co.nz.